Good evening. I'm Cynthia, and I am a member of ACA. Wow. I was at a Zen meditation. They have a Zen meditation on Mondays here behind the museum. And it was my first time there in Santa Barbara. And I looked across the room, and there was this woman who looked familiar. And afterwards, she came running up, and she said, "Are you Cynthia Waring?" And I said, "Yes." And it was my old college roommate. And she said, "You were the wildest person I ever, ever met." And I thought, oh my God, that was Donna. We were roommates my freshman year in college, and I was just a full-blown alcoholic acting out ACA. Nobody was really safe with me. Your money wasn't safe with me. Your boyfriend wasn't safe with me. Nothing. Nobody. Nothing was safe with me if I drank or was acting out, or I needed to hide my feelings, and I needed to annihilate myself with behavior that shut me down. And that's, I had no idea that how out of control I was for quite a while. It wasn't until I got married and I tried to be a good person. Wasn't until then, you know, and he was a student at Harvard and a very serious person, and I married him not because I even liked him, but he cried when I said no, and he was going to Harvard. And to me, I had no idea what a feeling was. So it really helped, because you could do almost anything and not suffer the consequences of your feelings, and or of regret or of guilt or of anything. You were just shut down, no feelings. So I married him. It was a kind of a hippie wedding at San Jose State College. And he was, I think that he was just a few years older than me. And my parents had boycotted the wedding, because he was Jewish and a rebel. He was a rebel. He was against the war in Vietnam, and my parents were Republican. So that was another reason I married him. My parents hated him, and that was good enough for me. And, you know, we went off to Cambridge, where he went to school, and I had a son, and all of a sudden, my feelings, there was something organic and chemical, and I couldn't drink because I was pregnant. I couldn't, you know, or I was nursing. I couldn't hurt this little child. And I was, for the very first time, I became terrified at my behavior and what I might do that might hurt someone that I love so much. And then I started to wake up. I wasn't able to keep him. I wasn't able to stay true to being a good mother. And I couldn't stop drinking. And I finally gave him to his father and left. And what I know about ACA is that he was opening my heart again. He was opening my heart, and nothing was more terrifying than my heart being open. And I couldn't be with him. I just couldn't be with him. Well, losing the love of my life, my child, was what woke me up. And trying to live with those feelings, I finally had left someone that I couldn't leave. I couldn't bear to leave. And I started looking for all kinds of ways to tame my nature. And I met Ram Dass, and I tried to meditate, and I meditated and drank, and meditated and drank. And I tried this guru Kirpal Singh, and you're supposed to meditate and do mantra 4 hours a day, you know, and listen to the sound current. And I put myself in a convent. I did everything. I ended up getting drunk on communion wine. And I left with the fisherman who came to the back door delivering fish. And, you know, it was just one crazy thing after another. I couldn't hold still. I couldn't tame myself. And I finally found AA. I used to do a mantra. I would have my son during the summer, and I would say a mantra a couple of months before he came, that I would not drink when my son came. I would not drink when I wouldn't smoke, I wouldn't drink, I was going to be a good person. And he would come, and then I would manage those 2 months. And then one summer I couldn't not drink when he was there. And someone said, maybe you're an alcoholic. And I went to an AA meeting in 1980, and I've been sober ever since. It was, I had no idea what AA was. I never had heard of it before. I don't know where I was, but I hadn't heard of it. And a few years after that, I found ACA. And with ACA, I started to unwind what had happened. And what I wanted to know more than anything is how I could have possibly left my child. What had happened to make that possible? And going back into the story and finding me, unraveling me, I found this amazing line back to being abandoned by the mother in my lineage. We don't get this crazy all by ourselves, you know. It's like we have a whole tribe. And my father was, my mother and father met on a trail in Yosemite on Bridal Veil Falls. And he told her he was 38, had never been married, and, I think he was never married and didn't have children. Well, he was 48 and was married and had 3 children and was living with them. And that was my father. You know, you just never knew what the truth was. And my mother, when she finally found out, instead of leaving him, she said, well, get a divorce, or I'm leaving, or just get a divorce, I don't know. And they got married. And their family, his previous family, was just completely destroyed. And so I was like their child. I was their child. And my father was an alcoholic and a concert pianist, and we had all of these kind of famous people in our family. And and we kind of lived on that, not particularly being good people, but being, you know, famous people. That was good enough. And but nobody was authentic, nobody knew who they were, nobody was in touch with their soul or anything important. And it was the generation as well. But my father was always having affairs, and my mother started taking more and more prescription drugs, mm-hmm. and so they were just both kind of gone, and they were divorced when I was 11, and my mother went off to work, and I was an only child and left in the house all alone all summer long, or at school during the year. But I had that isolation and that not knowing how to behave, not knowing how to be with people in a real way, not knowing who I was, how to pretend, how to manipulate others to get what you want. That was what I learned. And it also turned out that I was dyslexic. I didn't know it, but I was very dyslexic. And I didn't find out until I was 36. And by that time, I thought I was so stupid, you know, because I couldn't, my type of dyslexia was that I would read something and I couldn't understand what I just read. And when they discovered it, I had to go so slow with a sentence that I would put it into long-term memory, and I was reading below first grade ability. And so it was hard to know what was going on in the world. I didn't read newspapers or magazines, or I just depended on people. So I went to college, went to high school. Oh, I got pregnant when I was 16, and my parents forced me to have an abortion and put me in a foster home until that boy graduated from school. And during that time, I remember that's when I started drinking. That's when I really started drinking. And so I had that abandonment, that feeling like it was, you know, being thrown away, was just a real part of my core, my core beliefs about myself. And so I went to college, or I went, came back my senior year in high school and went to college and met Phil, had the baby. Got clean and sober in AA, and then started ACA. And what a journey waking up. What a journey that was. I used to just sit in those rooms and just cry, you know, through the whole meeting. Somebody would just have their arms around me. It was like I was coming undone. And I went to a John Bradshaw meeting. Has anyone ever done a John Bradshaw? They should have a warning label on that. There was this meditation that he did with us where you were supposed to find yourself in your childhood home and open the door, and I mean, something. I had a nervous breakdown at a John Bradshaw meeting. It was just way too much for me. And I really did have a nervous breakdown. I came home that night, my dog needed walking, and I started bath water. You know, it was like I couldn't put any of those things together. I would want a cup of tea and couldn't figure out how the hot water and the tea and the cup all came together. I just couldn't figure, I mean, it was like something had broken up in my mind. And I know now that a lot of us go through that when we're either hitting a bottom or we are starting to unravel what happened to us. And a lot of people now I know have I didn't know about antidepressants or anything like that, and I'm so glad I didn't take them at that time. I did later for a while, but at that time I don't think I would have ever come out of it if I hadn't had my wits about me. And just taking care of my dog kept me like, he needs a walk, I can do that. He needs feeding, I can do that. You know, and people in the program would come and get me, and they just helped me until I was back together again. I'm so grateful to these rooms. I can't tell you how grateful I am for sobriety and for all the inventories. And you know, we're a new set of people. We're new people that haven't had the help with all of these problems like this ever before. We haven't had this help before. I don't blame my parents at all. They, I'm sure, had just... My mother's mother died when she was 4, and she was raised in foster care and orphanages. You know, she didn't know how to be a mother. And when my son was 16, he came back to live with me. And I was 3 years sober, and I was just starting to unwind my ACA story. And he brought back all of that 16-year-old stuff that I had gone through at 16. It seems like life wants to heal itself, and we keep repeating things in our family that just bring it all up to us. And my son was very angry at me, and has only just recently, I'll say within the last 10 years, forgiven me. He went for 40 years really pissed at my leaving him. And he just was not going to let me off the hook. And I hurt him very badly. He's very emotionally bruised by what happened. But he's a doctor, he's doing well, and I'm so proud of him. He's what he knows. And a few years ago, he was off at a meditation retreat, and he called me. And he said, you know, during the meditation, it came to me that if you hadn't left, you never would have found yourself. And then I wouldn't have anyone to follow. And I was just like, it was like I could have died right then. You know, it was like these kinds of healings, if you just stay here and do the work and be willing to go through the pain of it, and when you are in pain, call someone, and that journey of becoming vulnerable, that journey of opening the heart, is such a spiritual path. There couldn't be anything more spiritual than opening the heart and becoming vulnerable to each other. My son had a child, Tiger. He didn't have a son, he had a grandson. And Tiger and I are just, we are buddies. It's like I've been given a son, you know, again. And he and I have been close. I was there the day after he was born. I fought tooth and nail to be a part of his life, even when his parents thought I was the most ridiculous thing in the world. I couldn't stop talking baby talk. I was just so in awe of this child. I was so in love with him that I was just a ridiculous person for probably a year until I could calm down and be with him like a person. But he and I, will be 17 on Monday. And we talk, I've taught him to meditate. We talk about everything. He reads Eckhart Tolle. He's a very deep, deep soul. And there is just such a camaraderie. I attribute all of this good in my life to having done the work in this program. This is what I'm trying to say, that all of this good coming to me is because of this work, being willing to face what hurts, being willing to be in pain, being willing to take off the layers and let you see me. About 20 years ago, 23 exactly, I started doing a one-woman show about my life as a masseuse. Oh, when I left the convent with the fishermen, I was completely broke, and I thought, okay, if you have to live in this world, you need a job. And I went to a shopping mall, and there was a sign, masseuse wanted. And I thought, oh, I bet I could do that. I went in and applied for the job. And the owner said I'd have to come back the next day and massage the owner. And I thought, oh my God, I've never given or received a massage in my life. And I was going home on a bus, and I saw a sign advertising massage. And I went in, got a massage, memorized what they did, and went back the next day and massaged the owner, got the job, and was a masseuse for 37 years. I know, so that was before. I couldn't do that now, you know. It was because I was cut off, you know. Oh. But it served me well. And each person that I massaged over 30,000 people. Wow. And, you know, it was like I needed touch so badly. It was something I was good at. Nobody ever said hurry up, you know, or you know that, and I was good at it. And so it worked for my dyslexia. You know, I didn't have to read anything, and it was my perfect profession. And I met so many amazing people and had so many stories. And to get them all out of me, I wrote a book about what it was like massaging 30,000 people. And I found a publisher, and they said, well, this is really nice, but we want to know who massaged these people. Who are you? And so I ended up having to write about me, which was quite revealing. so I ended, and that's what was missing from the book. And I ended up doing a one-woman show based on that book all over the world. And it was not so much a performance as a healing ritual about healing and opening and revealing. And now I teach memoir writing. So there's nothing more gratifying to me than finding someone find their story and finding their lineage and writing their way back there and including it all. And it's just, I feel so blessed. My life is just so full of blessings to have found my work, to have a grandson like Tiger, and to have so many friends in this wonderful program. And if you're new, I hope you will keep coming back, and don't be afraid. We're here for you. Thank you.